That. Next, we have Susie Amos. Susie is a principal of Finity and co-chairs the Institute's Cyber Insurance Working Group. She has a particular interest in the underwriting and pricing of cyber insurance, leading the research at Finity in this area. Susie enjoys seeing different specialists joining forces to tackle challenges and seek opportunities in the digital world. Susie.
Thank you, Winley. I think that might have been a bio from last time. So I'm not going to focus my presentation on cyber, but I'm going to talk about financial lines, which is also an area that I've been researching and keeping up to date with for the last maybe 5 to 10 years. And I see financial lines as a class that's got quite a volatile history, and it's notoriously difficult to price and reserve, and it seems to be full of contradictions, particularly in the last 5 years. So today I just want to try and pick apart the financial lines, because I think this is the way in which you can understand what's going on, and give my thoughts around that. So talk you through the trends, the challenges facing the industry, and where the future might be heading. So to do that in 15 minutes, what I'm going to do is, I know because you're all actually in the room, it's okay to start with figures and metrics. So I'm going to start with the overall picture of the financial lines story. So this is a short story. On the right-hand side, we have a mix of what lies within financial lines. So half of it's professional indemnity. So that's insurance for professionals, so you as an actuary or as an accountant. So that's worth about $800 million. The next biggest portion of that is the Lloyd's portion, which I've categorised as Lloyd's, but they basically write under professional indemnity and directors and officers. And they've grown quite significantly over the last 10 years in the Australian market. So, reaching almost $400 million worth of premium. D&O is a small portion of the premium pool, and you'll see later on that actually it makes up the majority of the claims, but that covers directors and officers insurance for large companies. Management liability is a small portion, which $50 million, which covers your small companies. So all of that's about a $1.6 billion premium pool. Now, in terms of the loss ratios that you've seen historically, you can see there during the GFC period that the gross loss ratio has been quite impacted by the GFC losses and heightened claims costs over that period. Although on a net level, the local insurers haven't really been impacted too much, and so the reinsurers were really the guys who got impacted. But more recently, and in a sort of benign economic environment, what I find surprising is that the claims costs continue to be on the elevated side, particularly for the gross level. The net level might be a little bit better, and they're getting the benefit from reinsurance, but I certainly find it surprising at an overall level that it looks quite good. What also is surprising over this time that premium rates have continued to reduce significantly, even after the GFC losses, which were quite material from the reinsurers. And so it's surprising to see that rates continue to reduce despite having quite sort of high or elevated claims experience. I think the way to understand this a bit more is to delve a bit more into the classes that underpin the financial lines premium pool that you see in the APRA stats. So what I've got here is broken down the loss ratio by professional indemnity, which is in the orange, directors and officers is in the grey, and management liability is in the blue. So what you can see is a very different story happening for each of those product classes. Professional indemnity certainly got impacted during the GFC, but has been tracking quite profitably. And it's an area which has seen a lot of new players come in and create a lot of competition in that area. Directors and officers is really the standout there, and since the GFC, you can see that there's been heightened claims costs or heightened loss ratio coming through. I think if you tried to estimate what that might be on a pricing basis, I'd say around 100%. what continues to surprise me over that whole time, rates have continued to go down year on year, and really with no sign of increasing until the latest renewal period now. So what's driving those claims costs being higher? It's class actions and the amount insurers have had to pay as a result of class actions. I'll talk a bit about those in a moment and how they're going to continue in the future. But that's really sort of been driving and causing additional losses from an insurer point of view. So one thing that I kept asking, I've asked the underwriters when they're telling me now that the market has started to turn, so it's started to harden. And I said, so why have you had those losses for that whole period, but only now are they starting to turn? Over that period, there's been a lot of competition. We saw the Lloyd's premiums was quite significant, and they've grown over that period. So they've created a lot of competition in the market. So that's the view of why the rates have continued to go down. But competition hasn't changed. It's stayed there. It's not been removed. So what's triggered it now? So thoughts around this and what I've heard from the underwriters are it comes from a couple of things. The bigger international insurers have started to make just that little bit higher combined operating ratio, so they're not making as much profit overall for all classes. And probably even more significant is the political environment on an international scale. So we have Brexit, we have Trump, and we have, you know, the rest of Europe and Russia, causing uncertainty over trade arrangements and how fluid transactions and business might be on an international scale. And that seems to be the thing that's triggered, from what I can see, the hardening of the market. And so for me, it's a contradiction to look at claims experience like that and only see a change once a political change gets sort of uncertain enough to drive change on an international scale. So thinking about the future and what that entails, there's three things here that I've picked out that I thought were the key things to think about in terms of the future. So where financial lines is going and what it might look like in 3 to 5 years. So the first one is class actions. Now, that clearly has been a key impact in the last 7 years in this class, but it's something important to consider for the future, and particularly in terms of pricing it appropriately going forward. Disruption I'm going to talk about, and it's a little bit of disruption that's happened in the past and disruption that might happen in the future, particularly relating to the digital world. And cyber. Now, cyber often gets lumped into financial lines. I don't quite know where to put it. It's a combination of a property class and a liability class, but it tends to be the financial lines underwriters who are developing this class. And because it is quite topical and important, I thought I'd put in a few comments around that and what the opportunities and thoughts about the future around cyber. So let's start with class actions. So we saw previously that class actions, from my point of view, have been causing a lot of losses in the D&O class. Now, it's something that arose during the GFC and became more prominent, but it didn't go away. And that's something I think that has surprised insurers in terms of pricing and underwriting for it, and maybe there's a little bit of a lag in terms of pricing and underwriting and charging the right premium in total going forward. So it's well established in Australia now. Australia seemed to have the most or the easiest class action regime or the easiest regime to raise a class action. There's a lot that's coming in from non-GFC actions. Security class actions quite significant. There's been $2 billion settlements to date. Litigation funding is what seems to have driven an elevated or a heightened class action activity, because these funders actually provide the money to get these actions raised, and they effectively fund the lawyers to collect and gather up interest and put these actions to the court. And they're making a lot of money out of it. So typically they get from 20 to 40% of the settlement. So it's a significant business for litigation funders. And the lawyers are also jumping on board and seeing it as an area of that they can make money. And they've started to raise new types of actions and find new opportunities to sue companies. And so what does that happen? It results in insurers paying more for class actions, particularly for directors and officers insurance, but it hits a little bit professional indemnity and public liability as well. So just in terms of the types of actions coming through, we have, you can see there the top line, it's grown quite significantly over time. 2014 was the highest year, but it sort of looks like it's settling around the sort of mid-30s level. What's quite significant is that the actions have broadened in terms of the type of actions over time. Previously, you might have seen the majority of them related to financial or security-related matters, but now you're seeing the other half broaden in terms of consumer law, public interest, so asylum seekers or farmers suing the government for policy decisions, and as well as sort of continuing on the same level of security and financial lines types of actions. So what does this mean for actuaries and how can we get involved? To date, it's been something that underwriters have tried to sort of underwrite on a case-by-case basis, but really I see it as an area which needs a more sort of holistic approach or a portfolio-based approach to pricing. And I think only now underwriters are starting to look to different ways and different techniques of pricing for these types of actions and identifying different types of risks in policies. So I see that this is an area where actuaries can assist underwriters with coming up with a price to make sure that the premium pool is sufficient to cover for these types of actions, because they're here to stay. Disruption. So disruption, there's two types of areas I think there's been disruption. Historically, it's probably not the typical definition of disruption, but there's been competition that's come into the market in financial lines driven by underwriting agencies. And you'll see a number of names there. A lot of them come from or are backed by Lloyd's syndicates, Lloyd's underwriters, and that's how the growth of Lloyd's has come into the Australian market over the last 10 years. But there's also a number of other underwriting agencies that are out there placing risks. I think I would probably estimate there's about 180 underwriting agencies, and they seem to be growing day by day. But really, this is a different sort of model to distribution. It's not to say they're new in the world. They've existed, but they haven't existed to this quantum in the commercial lines market. And a lot of them are quite focused on financial lines. Probably half of them write financial lines. And so really, it's sort of created a level of competition in the market that has meant that the prices have kept to the low level they have historically. So that's something to think about. And the brokers have also seen this new distribution channel, and a number of those have created underwriting agencies themselves so that they can both clip a ticket at the underwriting agency stage as well as the broker stage. So this has created sort of opportunities for additional profits, but it also creates opportunities for the bigger insurers to tap into niche markets and achieve growth as well. So that's something I don't see going away, and it's probably going to be there to enable insurers to achieve growth going forward so that they don't have to keep those specialty areas in-house. The other area which I see as a disruption going forward is the SME market. And we're starting to see some of this already. So online and digital capabilities, and also the desire for individuals to work and to place business and transactions more online, in my view, is going to lead, and it started to lead to more digital and direct placement of commercial insurance, and particularly financial lines as well. So this exhibit shows that currently 80% of the premium is placed with brokers, and only 4% is direct to the market, and 16% through underwriting agencies. On the right-hand side is a figure that shows the distribution of number of employees in a business, and really what this says, maybe 98% of businesses have employees less than 19 employees or less than 20 employees. So the majority of business out there are small, not complex, and therefore probably the market that would want to and be willing to transact online with through a either web bot or directly across the internet. So this is an area where more sophisticated pricing techniques, more in line with personal lines, is starting to be developed, and you can see that is an area where actuaries can get more involved in commercial lines, where previously it may not have been as sophisticated as what it's going to be going forward. So the last area, which doesn't quite fit the financial lines class, but it's tagged in there. We're going to have to work out where to put cyber. But it's an area that's certainly topical and certainly growing. So premium estimates in Australia is pretty small at the moment, probably about 30 to 40 million. But there's about 16 different distributors of cyber in Australia. And even in the news yesterday, I saw that I think Tokio Marine now has a cyber product and a cyber underwriter. So why are all these insurers gearing up for it? Well, it does look like it's going to grow, and certainly when you look at the US and the UK, the uptake of cyber insurance has been quite significant over recent years and still continues to grow going forward. Now, to date, insurers are pricing it in quite a simplistic fashion, generally. And going forward, I think there's definitely an opportunity for actuaries and you guys to be involved in this, in pricing in a more sophisticated way. The claims are going to emerge quickly. The risks are going to evolve quite quickly. So the opportunity is there to get into this space and be ready to assist the market with pricing it going forward. The last slide I have is just a view of how you might go about pricing for cyber and the things that you might think about. So it's an interesting product because it covers both first party and third party. So it covers property and liability. If you think about sort of the type of industry, the risk will vary by type of industry, the records they hold, how they what the security measures they have, and how they prevent people from attacking their systems, and also the location of where they operate. So that's sort of an example of where, while you may not have the data, if you have a think about where and how risk might vary, you can come up with a pricing structure to take forward and assist underwriters in this space. So that's an area which I think is an exciting opportunity to get involved in going forward. And really that's sort of the end of my sort of varied discussion on financial lines. It's one that if you pick it apart, you can understand it a bit more, but there's also some changes that are going to mean that there's opportunities for actuaries and you guys to get more involved and assist with improving the sophistication of the techniques going forward. Thank you.